Go for it.
Go for it. All right, Council, it is Tuesday, May 5th, 2020 at 6 p.m. We are meeting electronically pursuant to Utah Code 52-4-20 and pursuant to Governor Herbert's March 18th, 2020 executive order. We will start this, this meeting with an approval of the meeting's agenda. If someone would like to make that motion.
I will move that we approve the meeting's agenda.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Smith. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We'll move on to item number three, which is the public comment portion of the meeting. I don't see anybody. It looks like that we don't know.
There's nobody from the public.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and close that portion of our meeting and move on to items four and five, city reports and business, starting with Chandler.
Okay. Well, let me start with the recreation department. If you've tried to get on to the golfers this last month, it's been very challenging just due to the sheer volume of people that have been going through there. And I want to commend the golf staff for their willingness to, for their ability and their willingness to work through some tough measures to facilitate the social distancing measures and sanitation measures. They've had a great month. I want to say they probably almost, they nearly doubled their projected revenue from last year. So it was a great month for the golf course. Courses are opening up now around the state, so we do anticipate some more competence. I do want to commend golf for the amazing month that they had. Events, they're working through some challenging times in terms of the social distancing limitations that are in place through this orange phase. They can have groups of up to 20, but they're starting to reach out to all their clients. They've booked July to offer them a few different plans to try to work with them. So they've come up with some plans to entice them to still hold their events while maintaining those guidelines. And they're working on reducing the price structure to kind of bring in some more business with people that wanting to hold events with knowing what those guidelines are. So once that clears, we'll obviously be back to our normal structure, but we're trying to make do with what the times have given us. Recreation and events staff are working about 50% of their time in golf due to budget constraints in their respective departments. We've, as you are already aware, we've canceled all of our rec programs through, through June. And we look forward to the time when we can do those again. However, we are evaluating some classes that we can hold while at the same time still maintaining those social distancing measures. And then I, obviously, staff, we've met with the council in some one-on-one sessions and talked about opening up the building to the public. That is scheduled to happen on Monday, May 11th, and we look forward to having the public in our building. We are requiring people to make appointments prior to coming into the building, so they'll need to call the front desk or call the individual that they wish to meet with and schedule that. This is an attempt to try to keep the lobby from overcrowding. Passports is the same way. We're doing those by appointment only. When we have not done by appointment only before the pandemic, we had times when we had a very crowded lobby, just people walking in expecting passport services and to speak with the building department. So we're trying to avoid some of those situations. But those are the big things, and that's all I have. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Anderson.
So the only thing I have is I put a little blurb that's coming out in the May newsletter about high school and college graduates. We're just inviting the city to organize their own celebrations, neighborhood celebrations for their graduates. One of my neighbors and I, we were planning one for our neighborhood, and we thought we'd open it up to everybody. We coordinated with the high schools, make sure we weren't overlapping anything that they were doing, but inviting the neighborhoods to organize something like a drive-by parade for their graduates, invite the graduates to come out. Either they drive around in their caps and gowns and cars and everybody on their sidewalks cheer for them, or the opposite, where the graduates stand outside and the neighborhood parades around. Anyway, it's not anything official sponsored by the city. It's just an invitation to people in the city to get out and celebrate their seniors. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Councilmember Ellsworth.
I don't have anything at this time.
Councilmember Geddes.
I don't have anything.
Councilmember Smith. Councilmember Miller.
I don't have anything.
Okay. The only things that I have, did we talk about Holiday Festival last meeting? No? Okay. I can't remember. remember anymore. But so we are planning on the same week for Family Festival, but the only things that are being considered at this point are the fireworks show on Saturday and then a classic car cruise on Saturday before the fireworks. And that's being organized through the group that normally does the classic car show. And apparently they've done this with a few other cities where they basically do a cruise through the city. And we have a dedicated route so people can come outside and watch. But those are the only two activities that we can do, that we can hold no matter what color phase we're in. And since ours is at the beginning of June, we don't anticipate being out of orange that early anyway. So those are the two things that we'll be focused on, but it will be that Saturday. I think it's June 5th, June 6th. That first Saturday in June, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And then care tax spending has been an interesting conversation the last several days. So for Utah, the state received an allotment of funding to reimburse for COVID-19 related expenses. And then the Treasury also allowed any city or county that has a population of greater than 500,000 to receive a direct allocation. So in our state, Salt Lake County and Utah County received a direct allocation. And Utah County's direct allocation was $111 million, which is 100% of their annual budget. So it's quite a bit of money. So when I was on some calls earlier last week with some state leaders, we were told that because Utah County and Salt Lake County received a direct allocation from the Treasury, that cities within those counties that had incurred expenses would need to seek reimbursement from the county because the state's portion was reduced by the amount that went to the counties within the state. Later on last week, on another call with county leaders, they disagreed with that assessment and felt that the money that they received was strictly to be used for county purposes, and that the state was still going to help cities even within Utah and Salt Lake counties. So several of the mayors organized and reached out to legislative leaders. I reached out to Senator Hemmert and to Representative Brammer. Unfortunately, because it's money that's directly coming from the Treasury, the state has no authority to tell the county what the county can't do with that money. So we reached out again to county commissioners expressing our concern that we could be the only cities in the state that weren't receiving reimbursements on our COVID-19 related expenses. So since then, they have come around a bit more where they are now saying that, yes, they recognize that the county does need to help cities, and they are putting together a process in place of how we can submit our expenses to the county to be reviewed and approved. They still feel like it's likely that the state's going to help us, but that's not what the state's telling us. So we'll watch that. But we'll continue to follow up on that. I know Chandler's keeping in touch with city managers on this issue. I'm keeping in touch with mayors on this issue. But it's our understanding as of now that the county should be the ones helping us out, especially since they received such a large amount of money. The money cannot be used for any revenue shortfalls, so it can't be used to help cover any loss of sales tax revenue or property tax revenue that we might experience. But it can be used for direct expenses such as caution tape that we put on playground equipment, signs that we've had to make, the plexiglass barrier that we've placed in the front desk and at the passport desk, laptops that we had to purchase so that employees could work from home, phone charges so employees could work from home, those kinds of direct expenses that we hadn't budgeted for and that we had to implement in order to deal with this crisis. So it's looking better than it did last week, that we have some sort of a planning process, but until it's finalized, we will keep working on that to make sure that we are getting covered one way or the other. And that is all I have. Any questions on that? Okay. Then we will move on to our scheduled items of public hearings. The first one is a review action and public hearing on adoption of the tentative fiscal year 2021 budget, July 1st, 2020 through June 30th of 2021. I'm going to first open up the public hearing. I don't see anybody from the public on the call. So I'm going to close the public hearing and we'll get into the presentation. So Cheryl, it's all yours. Oh, we lost Cheryl.
Oh, no. Cheryl, you're just very, very faint. You're very hard to hear. It's not working.
It's really quiet.
I am. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Yeah. Just can't hear Charles.
Charles, do you have your phone with you? Can you log in on your phone?
While Charles is doing that, I'll just tell the council the interesting thing about this process every year, but more interesting this year, is that by state law, we are required to pass a preliminary or a tentative budget in May, I think by May 15th or something like that. However, we don't have a certified tax rate from the county, and we have no idea how COVID is going to actually impact our budget. There was an attempt in the last special session to delay the process for cities so we could have a bit more time, but there were a bunch of other things in that bill that caused a bunch of concerns, so it died. So we're going through this process knowing that it is likely that what we approve in June could be very different from what we're tentatively approving here, and even what we approve in June is probably going to be modified quite a bit over the next 12 months based on what actually happens. So we've shared that dilemma with legislators. They're aware of that.
Yeah. Hey, Charles, are you there?
Yes. Yeah, I'm there. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. We can hear you now.
Okay. Sorry about that. Oh, okay. You can go to the next page. So, this page, if you zoom in, is a report ULCT just came out with on Friday night, and it shows. It was on the last page of the report, and it gives their average projections for the 63 cities that were evaluated for this year and next year. So you'll see that in the second quarter, we started to do really well when they added the Wayfair taxes. And then the third quarter, they're predicting losing about what we gained there, and then so basically, let's see how this compares. Their projections are negative 3.3% for this year to 5.5%. We're actually not as vulnerable as some cities because of our grocery based businesses in our district, compared to others that have the auto and have some of the like malls and clothing stores. Those were the biggest hit, were I think clothing and auto. So if you go to the next page, Chandler.
Yeah.
Change my view somehow. I'll just trust that you're there because
we're there. Okay. It's the tentative budget of revenues.
Okay. Yeah. So as you can see, 35% of our revenues are sales tax. And then in this tentative budget, even with the large reduction that I made in the projections, and the next largest is the property tax and motor vehicle fees. So it's you know, over one third of the budget. It's pretty significant. So I think we were conservative enough, but if for some reason things really got down in the toilet, then obviously that would impact us than maybe another budget that relied more heavily on property taxes or fees. Okay, you can go to the next slide. Okay. So they projected 3.3 to 5.5% down for this year. I've only projected a 2.0% decrease from 2019. And then, but I was much more conservative in next year's budget, with a 12% decrease compared to their 2.5. So in the end, maybe it's a timing thing, but are still more conservative than what this study has shown. The revenues as a whole, I'm just trying to be safe, and I put that at 7.4% decrease for this year, and an additional 12.1% on top of the 7.4. So that's what that looks like. Next slide. So what does that look like as a whole? Nothing really changed with property tax. Yes, some of it might come in a little later, but our city, even in the down years, our city's probably 3 or 4% better than most cities at paying it. I don't know if we've got below like 94%. Well, I think Lehigh said they were down to 88% in 2008-2009. Sales tax revenues decrease from 2019, I have it down, 198,000. Motor vehicle fees down 24. Building related revenues down 79,000. Passport revenues 97,000. Now, some of these numbers, like passport, I think Chandler is, it has a right to be optimistic that those could be higher. We'll just have to see where that number could go up if we see the demand there in the next couple months. Garbage and recycling fees are flat. So what we've done in this budget with the fees is basically we haven't raised any fees despite our increased costs. This isn't a pattern that's sustainable, but it's something that we can do for a year, and then we'd have to reevaluate it. Public, so we know our recycling and garbage fees are going to go up every year based on our contract, and this year it's 3.2%. Public safety fees are going to go up at least 2%. And they could go up more. I mean, they're flat. I mean, the cost will go up 2%, and then the cost could go up more if the volume of calls goes up or if they finish their building. Community services programs is the biggest hit I have in the budget. Declining $315,000. And if we're not able to do programs in the fall, then or winter, that number would be even bigger. Miscellaneous revenues, I have down 38. A large portion of that is interest income, and interest rates have, you know, just are pretty much going to be nothing for the next year. So overall, $814,000 in lost revenue is what we have as a placeholder right now. And I mean, Chandler and everyone else that's been listening to these projections, everyone's just kind of taking their best guess. And we won't have really good information. I don't think we'll have really good information until at least July. So we're just going to do our best we can with the information we have, but we don't know how well it will stabilize in a couple months or not. So next slide. Expenditures.
Can I ask a question?
Yep.
On the garbage and recycling fees, if normally that's a pass-through cost, so if Waste Management is increasing their fees by 3.2%, why are we keeping ours flat?
Just for this year, we were just trying to help the residents more than not have to stress about it this year. But yeah, it's not a good long-term thing, but
is it a wise decision on a year that we're anticipating a 12% decrease in our general fund?
We can reevaluate that when we see in a month. I don't know if a lot of it that I think may depend on how well we're able to hold costs down the next 2 months, and if we're able to build up our fund balance as much as I think we can, then I think we're okay drawing down temporarily that, because we know those revenues will eventually be much higher, but it's not a permanent structural deficit. So we can definitely raise those if you want to, but I was just trying to keep them flat for now and then see where we are with our fund balance.
I take it we'd have to have a plan to catch up on that.
Well, the plan is the economy catches up, but
eventually.
We're cutting so much. Like, for example, passports for one. We would raise way more in passports if they just do half of what they normally do than raising the waste management fees. So, yes, it's good to keep up with the costs there, but there's event center rentals, if they can do half of what they normally do, that more than covers it. But if all those are very down or completely wiped out, then yeah, we'll have to figure out some way to balance the budget. If this is a more long-term thing, we will have to raise some rates there. So, and the thing with fees is we could even wait till July, because it's not like a property tax thing, and we can wait until there's better information and implement it then, because it's a fee. Versus, property tax, you have to decide in June and then announce it in August. So we can be a little more patient on the fees, I think, if we want to. It's just, that's something to take into consideration, is we have more time with fees. I mean, like, if the building was built in April, we could raise the fees right then and say, the building was built, we need to cover that cost. And I think that would be understandable. But if it doesn't get done till the following year, then we can raise the rates when that happens. So we have a lot more flexibility with the fees. Even if the economy only recovers, 75% on some of these, we'll still be in good shape. I think hopefully we've made drastic enough cost to deal with that, but that's where it is right now, and you guys have the book, your opinion matters the most, so if you think we need to do something else, then let me know. So the public works decrease in costs it's basically just a reallocation to the Class C roads. And that was one of the ways we were able to help the general fund. Also, by using the capital projects funds for major building maintenance that may be needed. That also helps the general fund. So we did make cuts to community services part-time staff funding. Right now, they are being utilized in golf to help with the extremely busy golf course. So if they are able to spend half their time this next year helping golf, then they should be able to use that budget. And obviously, if there's no events going on or no recreation programs, there's not going to be a lot of work to do there. So also, we usually like to transfer money to the capital project fund, and that is, you know, under these extreme situations, this extreme situation that has been reduced to zero, and the subsidy to golf has been reduced with the anticipation that this year will help them build up their fund balance, and they can use their rainy day reserves if they need to next year, if they're not performing as well as they are right now. So, yes, there is we usually don't like to rely on reserves, but this is one of those situations where I think justifies it based on a pandemic. That should be a temporary situation that should last several years. If this ends up being a long-term situation, then you have to restructure your budget, make sure your revenues are matching your expenditures operationally.
Cheryl, can I interject just real quick?
Uh-huh.
I think we're taking and I think it's rightly so, but I think we're taking a modified approach to our budget from what we've done in the previous years. Yes, in previous years, going back to the garbage and recycling piece, we have made these pass-along costs. I think staff recognizes that with the impact of the coronavirus on the economy, that we want to do as much as we can to keep residents' bills as flat as we can. And so that's why we're seeing that 3.2% try to be absorbed within the budget. And I think this is something that we can do for this year. Forward. It's not a year-over-year principle that I would advocate by any means. Same thing with the water and sewer fund transfer, is we can do this year, and so we're playing the short game and try to fix this year's budget, because if you remember back to our budget retreat in late January, early February, we anticipated that there was going to be a downturn in the economy. I don't think anyone anticipated how awful it would be projected before we even adopted the final budget. And so we're having to even twist it down even further from our earlier projections. And that's why you see such a big decrease in some of these really stable revenues, which we've seen in the course of good times. Our passports were passports, community services. We're seeing massive decreases in these. It's just because we're anticipating that there's going to be a real change in people's behaviors following the impacts of the pandemic. And so it's to be determined on that is, but I think we've set up a stronger budget that allows us to weather the storm in a way that we will be fiscally sound coming out of it.
Can you get for us the dollar amount that 3.2 represents?
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, I have that on a spreadsheet, but revenues, on the next slide, if you don't have, do you have any questions about the general fund and overall, or any other line items that you guys wanted, if you reviewed that might have surprised you, or you just don't understand?
So I do have a question about passports. I know people are going to want to apply for passports because missionaries are getting calls and people are applying, but is the Department of State any further along in processing any of these passports? Like, what are we going to do when we process these and then people are like, where's my passport?
We are notifying people that when their application goes to the Department of State that they are only processing passports in emergency cases. That will be something that will be notified of. The other thing that we need to notify them of is that there's no expedited passports performed. You could pay a little bit extra and get it shipped overnight to the Department of State. That's no longer an option. But we anticipate that once... Say that again.
Oh, I was just saying how long do we think it's going to take once their application goes in?
Typically, it's 6 to 8 weeks. This is something we have absolutely zero control over. Typically, it's 6 to 8 weeks. They're saying anticipate a lot longer than that.
Yeah, they actually gave us a handout that explains it's coming from the Department of State, not from us. That says there's no routine service and to expect significant delays. They're not making any promises.
So that's coming from them, and we hand that to our customers. And
yes.
Are they going to be given like a number to call the Department of State so they don't call?
Yes. We do that, yes.
We do that anyway.
We can't. No matter what.
Okay. Great. Okay. So if we want to move on to golf, just kind of mentioned this already, but we're not really budgeting. At least I don't have a revenue budget based on historical information. It's more based on how they're managing the golf course now, with a slight downturn based on there'll be more and more people at work and not able to play golf, and you know, other courses being open. But I just think the fact that a lot of people can stay home has really helped the golf course, and we'll see how that impacts us going forward. But they are doing a good job of building up their fund reserves right now, and most of everything's new that they have, so we anticipate a lot of the repairs should be minimal. And then for the golf debt service levy, that we would just keep that flat. It won't change. Okay, Class C Roads Fund, right now, you know, the biggest change is not on here, well, some of it's on here is public works time that they spend on roads. We haven't used Class C Roads Fund in the past for, but... what's helping fund this is the new highway sales tax fund, and though we will have lower gas taxes, we have reserves right now, and as long as they, historically, they've never spent like $500,000 in a year in a long time, but as long as they spend like $500,000 or less from now until next June, then I feel like they have the reserves and the income that they need. Because right now, I think we'll probably end the year with around $300,000 unless they start some projects early. But either way, I can't imagine the sales tax and the gas tax being less than half. But it seems like traffic's picking up, at least the way I drive. And it's not at 100% yet, but there are people out there driving. So Public Works is still working on their analysis, so I don't have a list of their street projects, and hopefully that is something they can share in the next month, but that would be helpful. The next slide.
Sorry, the analysis that Charles is speaking of is, I don't know if you recall, we did a road level of service presentation before the city council, I want to say, in 2016 or 2017. It's been a few years, so we reevaluated the roads, and we're going to come back with a similar map showing where the status of the roads are now. So that's the analysis that Cheryl was referring to.
Yeah. Capital Projects Fund. I anticipate the park taxes, because that is just point of sale, to be pretty close to flat. And so with grocery stores performing 25% higher so far during this point, I think that will stabilize. But for this early part of the pandemic, I think we should at least stay close to flat on our point of sale. And then plus we have some of the new development in our area that will be helping, like the Taco Bell. I noticed in the projections by ULCT, they have cities with a growing commercial, like Saratoga Springs, Eagle Mountain, actually growing in sales tax despite the downturn because of their new, I think, developments. Interest income will be lower because we've drawn down a lot of funds for Harvey Park. The remaining projects relate to small items at Harvey Park and related to the master park plan. And then also we have money set aside for building improvements. Are there any questions about capital projects fund? Okay, we're almost done. Two more funds. So updates on the water and sewer fund highlights also have held those rates flat instead of increasing those. And I've decreased the sewer rate based by $23,000 due to it has adequate expense coverage. And even with those changes, because we paid off that debt early, I am anticipating our debt coverage to be at 1.7, which is higher than the 1.25. So we're in good shape as long as we continue to be consistent in the way we collect our bills. My staff's done a real good job of following up with the people, but if for some reason our revenues dropped more than 7%, then we would have an issue with our debt coverage. So nationwide, things have dropped 25% for some utilities. So we're fortunate that we're not really seeing that yet. But if we do see that, then what happens is, you can, if you don't meet your debt service coverage, then you're basically required to raise your rates to whatever it would be to meet that at the next, you know, at the next budget cycle. So hopefully we can be consistent in how we try to be as compassionate as possible, but we also, I think it's more compassionate to stay on people when the balance is $100 to $200 versus when it's $700, that's overwhelming, I would think, to try to deal with. So we're trying to keep it right now no higher than $400 that people are past due. The last fund, motor pool fund, most of the changes there from the new park equipment that was acquired this spring. We have a couple mowers, and we have a truck that we haven't received yet, but we will someday. And then we have three vehicles that were are planned to be replaced, at least two. We'll see what the mark's like. The flatbed truck, sometimes if it's specialized, we'll hold it more than 3 years, just because we can, and it doesn't seem like it affects the value as much if it's a diesel. So is there any questions? That's kind of a summary, and this is just tentative and maybe we'll have a budget discussion every month for the next year, but this is where we're starting. This is a lot more attention to the budget than I was hoping for, but...
Any questions from the council? I love this. Okay, everyone's shaking their head no.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, then. We need a motion made on adopting that budget.
I'll make a motion that we approve the tentative fiscal year 2020-2021 budget.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second that.
Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously, so we'll move on to item number 7, which is a review action on an ordinance amending City Code Title II, Chapter 3, related to the Youth City Council Advisory Committee.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Let me, first off, before I begin, commend Charlotte and staff for putting together their budget in a very challenging time. I know this, the budget really feels like a moving target this year, and I think that there's not going to be a whole lot of clarity on it until or further into that fiscal year. So, like Charlotte said, I think that's going to be something that we will be coming before the council probably every month.
Charles really excited to do a monthly budget presentation for a year.
So, all right, so what we have before you tonight is an amendment to the Youth City Council Advisory Committee. As you recall, we've been going through all of the committees and commissions and revising some of their policies and procedures and the code related to those bodies and making changes to reflect what they're either actually doing or reflect best practices that they should be following. And so Youth City Council is no different. In these changes, you can see that we're changing the way that they apply. We're giving the adult leaders of the Youth City Council a lot of leeway in terms of admitting people. But we're also making it so that all applicants who meet the requirement that are set forth in the code are accepted as a member of the YCC. I don't see any reason why, if you meet the requirements, that you should not be able to be a part of that body. The YCC appointments shall be appointed by the YCC advisor, and all the YCC appointments shall serve for one term, and that's going to last for one fiscal year. One other additional change that we're making on the YCC code is that we're adding an ex officio member, which would mean a city council member that would serve alongside the YCC and serve as the liaison between the YCC and the city council to keep them apprised. The YCC mayors, we're proposing that they go from two mayors to one mayor, and they serve for the term of 12 months fulfilling their certain duties. And then I think the last major change, there's two more major changes we want to talk about, is that they will be, their meetings, they need to follow the same open public meetings that all of our other bodies do, and so those need to be sent to the city recorder for publication. And then finally, on the fundraising balance, that all the funds that the Youth City Council received will be promptly deposited in the proper city accounts following the accounting best practices set forth by the state. This code has been reviewed by the city attorney, and they've drafted the resolution for you tonight, the ordinance for you to adopt. Are there any questions that I can maybe address or any questions I can answer?
All right, now I will take a motion by the council.
I'll go ahead and make the motion to approve ordinance number 5-5-2020A, an ordinance amending Title II, Chapter 3 of the Cedar Hills City Code pertaining to the Youth City Council Advisory Committee.
Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Councilmember Smith. We'll do a roll call vote just in the order I can see you on my screen. Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller. Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
That motion passes unanimously. So we'll move on to item number 8, which is a review action on a resolution making assignments to members of the City Council, staff, and residents to certain boards, committees, and entities.
Okay. Now that we've made the modifications to the YCC code, we are proposing that Councilmember Smith serve as the ex officio member for the Youth City Council.
Any questions or comments on that?
That's good to me.
All right, then I'll take the motion.
I'll make that motion. I move that we approve resolution number 5-5-2020B, a resolution assigning members of the City Council staff and residents to the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, to certain boards, committees, and entities. Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Miller. And it's a resolution, so we'll do roll call again. Councilmember Anderson?
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth?
Aye.
Councilmember Smith?
Aye.
Councilmember Miller?
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. So that is it. If someone wants to make a motion to adjourn.
I'll motion to adjourn.
Motion made by Councilmember Smith. Is there a second?
I second that.
Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, then we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.